QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, net control for the Tech Tuesday net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater, 147.330 megahertz, a plus offset of 600 kilohertz, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. All right, one announcement here. Of course, our Big Bear Amateur Radio Club has their meeting coming up this month on the 28th. We will also be doing a tech antenna workshop prior to that, starting at 5:30, meeting starting at 6:30. Also, on the 29th, Sunday, 1 o'clock, there will be another session of ham testing starting off the new year. Walk-ins are allowed. Email me if you have any questions to KF6Q at ARRL.net. Okay, topic for the evening. Got a couple topics. One is trans-equatorial propagation with VHF signals. Pretty cool stuff. This is pulled from the January issue of QST 2012, page 89. And we're going to pull a few things out of the February issue also. All right, and we'll read off a brief roster here of some of our regular listeners out there, starting with WB6CLZ. Mike.
Good evening, Tom and the net. Just making sure my signal is up to par. It was a little scratchy on this end. It's WB6CLZ.
A little scratch there, Mike. Nothing to worry about. How about WB6CIN, Cindy?
Good evening, everybody. This is WB6CIN.
Well, good signal there, Cindy, and no scratch whatsoever, 5-9. That's perfect. Moving on to KA6CIA, George.
Good evening, Tom. KA6CIA.
Good evening, George. Glad to have you out there. This is KF6Q, Tech TuesdayNet for ID. Let's see, moving on down the list here. How about KJ6HCS, Mike? And nothing heard. How about KJ6FIL, Mike?
Hey, good evening, Tom and the group. KJ6FIL.
Glad to have you out there, Mike. Looks like we got some warmer weather coming our way. How about WA6ITC? Rod, are you out there this evening?
Yeah, we're out here. This is WA6ITC in Lake Williams.
Well, thanks, Rod. Got you on the list here. Thanks for listening up just about every Tuesday now. How about KJ6KDL, Jim?
KJ6KDL here with KDK.
All right, Jim and Rosemary, KJ6KDK, glad to have you both out there. And moving down the list, how about W6GZI, Frank? Nothing heard, how about KI6IQA, Kelly?
Good evening to all, KI6IQA.
Kelly, glad to have you out there from Shea Meadows area. And how about K6GVL Ron from Green Valley? Got no Ron out there. How about N6BOPN from Pomona? Jonathan Hurd, 86PL, Harold.
Evening, 86PL.
Good evening, Harold, and I was in your area there. I was at K&H and right by Electronics Warehouse there today. How about K6LTS Quint from Haruka Valley?
Good evening, Tech Tuesday, Tom. Got a couple satellite shorts for you, and my signal will be better for my report. K6LTS.
Okay, Quint, glad to have you out there. And, yeah, just a little scratch and error, but nothing to worry about. Appreciate you being out there, Quint. W6JLM, Judith. I think Natty's got her tied up. How about W6KMM, Kent? I think Natty's got them both tied up. They're playing Cowboys and Indians. moving on down the list here. K6YNW, Chris. Okay, no Chris out there yet. KJ6TIJ, Chip, is at the Desert Rats meeting, so he will not be joining us at the moment. Maybe later. KD6LEN, Bill.
Good evening, Tom. We're here. We'll just be listening tonight. KD6LEN.
Okay, Bill, glad to have you out there listening. How about AE6CK, Victor?
Good evening, Tom and the group. Victor, AE6CK.
Okay, Victor, glad to have you out there. How about KA6ROD, Rod?
Good evening, everyone. KA6ROD.
Hey, good evening, Rod. Glad to have you out there. Appreciate you tuning in here this evening. KB6LTY, Christy. All right, nothing heard there. Notice we might have a little bit of a moisture inversion while we're going there. I don't know. Anybody else out there as a guest would like to check in? Please come back to KF6Q.
KF6QAB.
All right, we got a perfect double there. I didn't get anybody. Try that one more time.
KJ6PYV. K9AOG, Steven.
All right, we got KJ6PYV, David from Sugarloaf. Glad to have you in there, and thanks for the email. Appreciate that. And Steven out there in Long Beach, K9AOG. Yes, K9AOG. Anybody else?
W6JLM.
All right, don't send the ransom money. She got loose. Okay, Judith, glad to have you out there. Appreciate you checking in. Anybody else?
WA6HNQ.
HNQ, glad to have you with us this evening. Anybody else?
WA6KMM.
Cancel search and rescue. Ken is there. All right, Ken, glad to have you checking in. Anybody else out there?
Good evening, Tom, and everyone on the net. This is K6BCK, John at San Bernardino.
K6BCK, John, glad you could join us this evening. Anybody else? All right, anybody out there still listening in, whether you've checked in or not, feel free to jump in with any questions, suggestions, or comments at any time. Well, Michael, WB6CLZ, trans-equatorial propagation. I don't know, do we need a visa for that, or explain as a starter, just What is that about? That's in the VH band, I think. Back to you, Michael.
Tom, well, we spoke a little bit about it last week, about HF trans-equatorial propagation. This week, we are speaking of VHF trans-equatorial propagation. I'll give you right out of Gordon West extra class license prep book. What is trans-equatorial propagation? And that's propagation between two points at approximately the same distance north and south of the magnetic equator. That's the short list. Back to you, Tom.
All right. Anybody who wants to kind of pull some information on this, like I say, once again, we're we're using as one of our references, the January 2012 QST. This is page 89, great article by, was it N0JK? Alright, so the geomagnetic equator, so I'm thinking that's got to be around the regular equator, but probably not exactly the same, but probably enough for our, all our purposes.
Well, yeah, for our purpose, it's pretty similar, but it is 15 degrees, where are we? Yeah, it's about 15 degrees plus or minus of the actual equator.
Okay, roger that. And I see that this is using the F2 region of the ionosphere. Anybody was with us last week, we've got the, and I don't know what happened to A, B, and C, but we have the D, E, and the F zones. And the F zone really is the upper zone, the outer layer, which I think we said was well above 120 miles up. At that point, really incredible amount of bounce as a mirror, we would say, of our radio signals up there. Mike, you want to explain a little bit how that bounce works? And I guess because of the fact that we're going same distance above and below the equator, so it's kind of like a reflector right there above the geomagnetic equator, right in that area there. Is that correct?
Is correct. It is basically a zone of high electron density associated with the F2 region. And the signal on a normal F2 propagation type signal will go up, hit the F2 layer, come back down, hit the Earth again, and go back up and bounce. And every time it does that, you lose a little bit of signal and it attenuates it a little bit. Not so with trans-equatorial propagation. It will hit that zone of high electron density at the base of the F2 layer. Then it travels parallel to the Earth until it comes at the other curvature, the south or north, whichever opposite you're at. Will hit that and come back down on the other side. So a very, very efficient mode of propagation. You don't lose a lot of signal on it. Hence, the signals that you're getting are very good quality. I've had lots of trans-equatorial HF contacts, never had one on VHF. Maybe we'd like to hear from somebody that has experienced that, but very, very crisp, very clear, clear propagation. Not like your typical, you would expect from a typical F layer, signal. Back to you, Tom.
LCS.
Yes, Clint, we didn't forget about you, don't worry. But anyway, go ahead.
Bring this down to Earth for me. How predictable is this? Please walk to the shack, flip on the radio, what band, and how can you predict how predictable is this phenomenon?
Well, Clint, let me add into this, and this is actually something that, like all propagation, which involves ionization of the F layer or other layers of the atmosphere, that does change. And it's actually predictable only by primarily solar activity. Now, with this, Mike, if you're also looking at this, primarily is between 20 to 40 degrees north and 20 to 40 degrees south of this geomagnetic equator. It's like the perfect spot. If you're further north or further south, it's probably not going to work as well. Also, that part of this is due to the what they call a fountain effect. There's electrons formed by ultraviolet light photoionization. I knew I'd get that out. In the F layer in the morning, and rises upwards due to the effect of this electrical and magnetic field. A lot of stuff here based on solar activity. So like anything we have, ducting, all these different types of propagation, dependable, I would say not so much. Mike, you want to go ahead and add to that?
Yeah, I would say not very dependable at all. More likely in the periods of high activity, and more likely in the period of you know, your peak of your sunspot cycle. The cool thing is we're in a perfect location. I mean, 24 to 40 degrees latitude north and south. Well, LA is just a little bit more than 34 degrees. So I mean, we are in a perfect location for this type of propagation when it occurs. But like most propagation, not as predictable as others, and really hard to tell, and sporadic at best.
Yeah, and actually, I know with a lot of the low Earth orbit LEO satellites, we are actually still pretty high if you would consider 500 miles high, but that's low in terms of satellites. And compared to that, this F layer we're dealing with is between 120 to 130 miles out, so well below that. And that's, as you see, the span that we're getting by that bounce. Clint, at 500 miles, and I know I have worked, and tying this into the solar, this propagation and trans-equatorial, and similar would be the gray layer and a lot of others. Now, at 500 miles footprint, I have worked satellites on a 10-degree pass. I'm going to say if that would be the lowest pass possible. Is there any numbers you can give us out there, or say how far that actually equates to from point to point, if both stations were working a 10-degree pass and you know, say across the continental United States?
Well, your 10-degree pass, that means the satellite is probably more like 700 miles away from you. The only example I have at the top of my head, Tom, is I talked to Georgia one day, and it was only a 4-degree elevation pass for him. He was using the same exact equipment, aero antenna and a little Gesu FT-60. And the center of my footprint was over New Mexico. So it was probably 550 to 600 miles from me, but only 4 degrees for him. But is that reproducible tomorrow anytime I want? No. That's 2,250 miles, about 2,200 some odd miles on land. But again, that by no means is that a record, and nor can I guarantee I can do that every day.
And just to share a little bit with, I think this is a couple of years ago, did get a QSL card from, I'm going to say in Tennessee, Kentucky area, which of course are spread out a lot from east to west, let's say about mid-state. It was a very low pass for me. I think it was with AO-51, and I do believe it was passing over Texas. Also, and I do believe again, AO-51 and Hawaii from here. I did not work him. There was a Mexican station that was probably due south of me working with the same thing. AO-51 was about halfway between Hawaii and us across the Pacific. So that's, 3,000 miles in either direction. I think it's pretty decent. All right, anyway, real quick here, Mike. I did forget to let Clint get in there, and he's got a couple of reports for us. Let him finish that up, and then we'll move on to some of the other issues here with TEP. Go ahead, Clint.
Thank you, Tech Tuesday, Tom. I want to start off with saying something that you all hear all the time. Every time you open up a computer magazine, you see it about backing up. I woke up and I got up to do a show via Skype Saturday morning in Georgia. And so they're 3 hours ahead of us. So I was up 3 hours ahead of time. We were going to do a Skype test. And couldn't address any of my external hard drives. And I thought, oh my God, this is interesting. It was just a cable problem. But man, oh man, that feeling in your stomach. If you don't regularly back up, at least your data, if not everything else, do it. The prices for external hard drives now are as inexpensive as ever. Okay, a couple satellite shorts. In your February issue of QST Magazine, there's an article by Doug Cook, I think it's KD5PDN, on working the ISS. Doug is a cool guy. I didn't know he was writing this article. He mentioned our site is one of the best, our local website for work on the LEOs is one of the best sites on the web, which, well, that was cool to see that in print in a national magazine. But the February issue of QST, How to Work the ISS, APRS, with your VX8 or other handheld radio, and a tape measure beam, the whole tape measure beam project on my website. If you are not yet a member of ARRL or haven't gotten your February issue in the mail yet, it's available, the reprint of that article is available on my website. And just go to the satellite schedules page on worksat.com, work-sat.com. Let's see, one more thing, Tom. I was further delighted to see that NASA, on their website and in a publication directed towards all the schools, more than 1,000 schools in the country, cited our Flabob Airport project that's coming up in April, cited our website for other projects to look at as a site that they should emulate. Oh, that was cool. Flabob Airport here in Riverside will be talking to an astronaut up in the ISS at 12,200 miles an hour, middle of April, the week of April 16th. And that website is ISS-Flabob.com. That's ISS, the International Space Station-Flabob.com. As far as status on the birds, AO-27, working marvelously, SO-50, predictable and working marvelously, and packet data can be monitored on the ISS, from the ISS with your handheld setups. Tom, that's all I've got, unless you've got any questions. K6LTS, thank you for the time.
Yeah, Clint, also, if you hadn't mentioned that, I noticed that with the QRP to the ISS, a very good article, February 2012, they actually had the formal the death of AO-51 also in that issue, unfortunately, but a lot of good contacts I've made with that, so. Well, good deal. Be interesting if we could ever get Doug or any of these guys to visit our club up here. You know, that'd be pretty great. Well, good deal. Sorry I didn't mean to zoom by you. We're just so excited about this TEP. And Mike, you know, like you said, we're in the prime zone of this. Have you ever had yourself an opportunity to do that? I think I've heard, we're looking at 50 and up to 60 megahertz. We're looking at the 6 meter band primarily with this issue, you know, with this article. And I know you've worked it on HF, but I guess 6 meters is still something to do yet. Is that correct?
Well, we've been playing around with 6 meters for a number of years, but I have never experienced a 6 meter transequatorial contact that I'm aware of. I've never really worked much TX on 6 meters. Mostly I'm type HF type of guy. When I was a tech, I played around with it a lot, but didn't really do a lot of DX, didn't hear a lot going on.
Copy that. Also, just as an honorable mention here, we may go on to this next week. The 2012 QRP EME, the moon, and possibly we can get Bob in there on this with his EME station, get an update on what he's doing. Pretty cool, 128 element. Yes, I said 28 element, Yagi. Very long on QRP, so pretty cool, pretty cool. Well, neat stuff. Before we move ahead here, and Mike, is there anything else to add with this? I mean, this is pretty interesting stuff, and using, like I say, not always predictable, but pretty cool if we can do it. And with the solar activity coming up, cycle 24, I think we've got a good shot of that, wouldn't you say?
We hope conditions get up there to where we can enjoy that sort of propagation. We're kind of seems like we're in the doldrums now. I didn't do a proper space weather propagation report, but you know, we're still kind of marginal there. So hopefully we'll get up there and be able to play around with that. One quick thing, there is two different kinds. There's afternoon transequatorial propagation, and and there's evening. The afternoon, you know, the MUFs are only up to about 60 megahertz, and you can expect probably 300 to 4500 mile contacts. The evening one's a little bit different, a little bit higher in frequency. 432 is not unlikely, and ranges from 1800 to 5500 miles. And usually late afternoon and into the evening, sometimes in 7, 8 o'clock, maybe a little bit later at night. That's about all of the TEP info in a nutshell without getting into this real technical stuff here, Tom.
Well, fantastic. So in the evening TEP, yeah, as I see there, occasionally up to 432. Wow, that's UHF. That's way up there. I see that he was running a 10 watts and a 2-element quad. That's incredible. Well, fantastic. Good information there. Anybody out there listening, any questions or comments about this TEP? Pretty neat. Just one more thing about DX radio. Please come back to KF6Q.
I got a quickie.
Yes, go ahead.
Not 100% sure, but if anybody wants to hear what that sounds like and they have Gordon West's, any of his study manuals, a lot of times he's got that CD or DVD in there, and he'll play you what that sounds like. And I think that I have heard trans-equatorial propagation on that, on VHF. So if you want to hear what it sounds like, check that out and see if you can find that in there.
Okay, Mike, good deal there. Also, we had KJ6KDL, Jim, looking through part of the February issue, this stuff here we just talked about from January, a couple of things about the ISS in February. Jim, did you find anything in the February issue specifically that you'd like to discuss with us this evening?
Well, Tom, yeah, I saw two articles that are back-to-back on pages 34 and 37. The first one is an article by a guy named Merton Ellis, W0UFO, talking about rating solar panels, showing a way to do load testing and determining a solar panel and a battery match. And the next article is by a guy named Dave, I guess his name is Gauger, G-A-U-G-E-R, W9CJS, and he converted his ham shack over to run off of 12-volt batteries. I thought Mike would find these articles interesting because one of the things that the latter article talks about near the end is avoiding pulse width modulation noise in his circuit by picking up a relay-based charging system for about $25. So it's a very interesting article set for somebody who's interested in playing with solar and maybe just getting their 12-volt gear on batteries.
Yeah, there's a lot of good information there. I was looking at both those articles here the other day. Actually, the one where he's actually got all the different ratings and charts and shows the actual production curve of voltage versus current draw. And I think, as you'll see on the page 36, really cool. It's like a dashboard solar panel. I have one. I think I picked one up for another ham up here. They only put out about 5 watts, but pretty cool for a trickle charge, which is what they're meant to do. And actually working with your QRP and a small battery would be excellent. Mike, do you have that copy handy also?
Well, I'm looking at it now. I looked at it a little bit before. As a matter of fact, I was going to bring that up for our next week's discussion, so I haven't really delved into it. I see, though, that down here for, what is it, $3,000, here's an MCOM power with solar, which is kind of interesting, a little bit priced with a 30-watt foldable solar panel. Right now, I am in the market. I'm looking, kind of shopping around and looking to see what what's available. I'm looking at a 15 to 20 watt panel for this new KX3 that I've got ordered. I'm going to kind of put that together when we go up on the trail and see if I can have it charge the internal batteries. It's got a really neat charger in the radio that you can fully adjust for just about any charging means. So I'm headed that way. I just haven't really digested this whole article yet.
Yeah, I think in maybe in the next upcoming weeks we'll start looking at that. There's a lot of new developments almost every month and definitely every year. A lot of flexible solar panels almost roll up into throw a rubber band around it, roll it up like a sleeping bag, and it'll spread out. Some of these are not the most efficient, but the fact is that they do work and they're excellent backup, especially if you're, like you say, you're backpacking or on the trail, emergency power if you're out there someplace, and as the redundancy of phase three when all other phase one and two fail. So a lot of good stuff there, and keep your eye on the prices of this stuff as they all vary. Seems like as technology moves forward, they have been coming down somewhat. I know that a while back, a 200 to 250 watt or 200 watt panel in that range was about $1,000, and I think they're doable now for around 400 and maybe even less in quantities, but in that ballpark. So, and they vary as the time goes on, but new developments always drive these prices down. So if you ever thought about it and thought it was too expensive, keep your eyes open and ears open, and we'll try to keep everybody posted. Jim, anything else in there you can see and like to mention?
Well, that was the major one. On page 39, they've got a picture of how this gentleman ran in his home power and the solar power, and he can manually switch between the two if he needs to. I did find over at Orvac a couple of months ago a $150 electronic project or electronic AC kit that allowed you, if you had your mobile home, you could run from your generator and plug in your rented power, and if your generator ran out, it would automatically switch. That was 120 volts. So it'd be interesting if they had something like that for 12 volts, and then you could be more automated. And then this is just for Tom to get, for him to get a kick out of this. On page 52, there's an Elecraft KPA500 6-meter 500 watt amplifier to drill at. But turn to page 54 and look at the size of the toroid they put in that thing. It's just amazing. That's it. KJ6KDL.
Yeah, KF6Q here with Tech Tuesday on the Big Bear Rancher Radio Club repeater. That toroid, of course, is for the power supply. It's a power transformer toroid. And yes, it is humongous and probably weighs a ton. I think with a lot of this stuff, we say going green and whatnot, and we all, as we build stuff on our own, we have to think outside the box. One thing about all this is I'm going to suggest like a good RV supply is a good place to look around, or used RV supplies where, like you say, Jim, they have different things to switch. A lot of RV stuff is 12 volt, possibly 24 if it was diesel truck based, and things like that. A lot of good stuff out there that we could apply to backup systems for ham radio. And Mike, anything to add?
Now, that would be a good place. Even sometimes RV wrecking yards where you they have a lot of that sort of stuff. Sometimes you, like, pick apart for RVs. I don't really know of any, but I've heard that they're out there. That might be a good place to scout out and look for some pre-owned stuff.
And like I say, is repurposing. I do want to mention one more time here on our net. For those of you that didn't really copy the mail on this earlier, earlier today I was down in Orange County area, had about an hour to kill, so I went by a business down there called Shore Metal Supply. There's Pat Metal Supply, K&H, a lot of different supply places in Southern California really great if you need those parts for aluminum or steel or even copper. And what the key point is, that everybody has what they call a REM pile. And these remnants or whatever, sometimes they're small, sometimes that little piece that you need, but you don't need to buy a 6-foot stick. And they sell it by the pound. Most of them there are between $2.75 to maybe $3.25, depending on the store. And they all have a good selection. Shore seem to have a very huge selection. Patton also, there's a Patton in Ontario. And there's others out there. These are just three based on the Inland Empire in Orange County. Great places, a lot all over Southern California. Check out the REM pile. You're going to probably get some pretty quality stuff at about the cheapest price you're going to find per pound is pretty much it. So, and that varies as the economy varies and the price of metals go up and down. Mike, I think we had talked about that, and you've been in there yourself. Is that correct?
Is correct. Very, very good selection, nice people, and they'll help you out. If they don't have it, there's one down the street. If you just head down Ornthorpe to the west, then State College to the north, about a half a block in is Benner Metals. He's got a good selection, too. Doesn't have, it's not as... I would prefer to go to Shores, but Benner sometimes has the things that Shores does not.
Yeah, I copy that. I actually have seen them online. I've got a little online cat a little list here of different places. And here's an example. One of the items in the REM pile down there at Shore, these were about 1/8-inch diameter solid aluminum rod. I'm going to say approximately 10 feet long, maybe 8 foot long. Of course, that's a lot longer we would need for 2 meters, but this is excellent stuff. And I think one of those probably weighed, if it weighed a pound, I doubt that. A handful of them would probably go for, under $10. You'd have enough to build the elements for Yagis some more. and a lot of different materials there for boom stock. Larger diameter stuff, 1.5-inch, 2-inch diameter stuff. This is a REM pile. And these lengths are not 2 feet long. A lot of this stuff is 8-9 feet long, very doable and very workable. Good selection, Mike. I think Banner Metals, I've never been there, but I'd like to check that out. Anybody else out there with anything to add or any questions, please come back to KF62. Alrighty, if there are any questions, I think we're going to close the net probably a little early tonight. I do appreciate everybody joining in this evening, and always try to keep you posted as we will be doing a lot of antenna stuff this year. And the key point is to try to get materials as cheap as possible without sacrificing any quality and getting stuff out there that'll work as good, if not better, than factory built. So, alrighty, QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KO6Q, net control for the Tech Tuesday net. Closing the net at 1900 hours and 37 minutes. Returning the repeater to normal use. Thanks again for everybody for joining us, and we'll be here for a little bit.